Guess some people will still come in. We have quite a full session in this right before lunch now, and the first one is a bit of a challenge for me because I'm trying to pretend I'm John Clenson. I'm not good. I'm not sure how successful that will be. He gave a presentation last week in Geneva at the ITU, at an ITU workshop on multilingualism, and he gave that presentation there. And I just asked him if I can use his slides here because I thought it was interesting relevant for the session, for this topic. I will skip some of the details there and some of the slides. The whole presentation will be on our website, and I will send a pointer to the AFNOC list and the AFRINIC list later. But you can find it from the ISOC website also, all the presentations given here. Because this was part of a whole workshop, he looked at the other presentations and figured that most of the papers are actually about some technical details about technology, about how to implement IDNs and things like that. And he felt maybe that's not the right approach for the problem we're trying to solve. So are these really the answers to the right questions? And he thinks we need to talk about more about culture, about language, access to the network for non-speaking users using maybe non-Roman alphabet and maybe not keyboard adapted. And then we have to figure out what the problems are related to that. So what problem is it we're trying to solve? So he feels it's really important to actually have a good problem definition, to really be sure what problem there is, because in this whole area of IDN, internationalization, multilingualism, localization, you know, you already see in the number of terms that it's quite a big area, and it's important to know what we're talking about. So he feels that if you're getting distracted in the wrong issues, we're taking the wrong direction, or we're not agreeing on what the problem really is, we're wasting a lot of energy and resources, and we also may come up with the wrong solutions. So the following slides just list a few things that are there to solve particular issues, particular problems. So for instance, names. Names are there to solve a specific problem or a number of problems. For instance, navigation, how to find things on the internet when the name is known. And they act as an identifier to distinguish one thing from the other. But identification usually requires context. So naming is not very interesting in itself. It's a means to achieve something. It's a solution to a specific problem. And they're not really interesting in itself except for those who sell names, he says. So another example is like writing and character coding, which is also, you know, it exists to support languages and texts. And few users really care about writing systems except as a mode for expression, of a mode as expressing themselves in a particular language. And there is another example he lists here as character coding systems, and I won't really go into detail of that. It's another solution to a particular problem, computer character coding systems. Now, he feels that the real issue actually is to make the internet facilities accessible globally. And that this is the issue and this is the problem we're trying to address. So that there's content and access in a specific language, that there's access to content in every language, that presentation is appropriate to the culture of a particular community, and that there's no particular advantage to users in particular languages. Like you could say English, for instance, nowadays, using Roman alphabets. So there are these two terms, internationalization and localization. And he feels that internationalization is actually a set of tools and principles. And what you really want is localization. So what's localization? It says it's an adaptation of systems to local needs with respect to language, culture, local terminology, conventions in a culture, the different words you have. So that's one part of it. And then you'd have to define how local do you want to be? What does local mean in your context? Is it a country? Is there a common, you know, culture and convention and terminology, language in your country? Or is it specific to a particular region or village? Or just your community maybe? So that are all issues one has to address before trying to solve, before trying to implement something. So what's localization in the global context? He says that localization is hard work, but it's actually quite straightforward. Once you know what the language and the culture is, and once you understand what your context and what your cultural context is in the language that you're working in. So end of coding exists or can be created for writing and displaying content in that particular language in that context. And, he says at the end, if one doesn't care about simultaneously interacting with the global internet. So he says localization is really localization. It doesn't necessarily mean you can interact at the same time with the global internet. So that's kind of his outset. It's not necessarily negative. You just have to understand that what you're talking about. It's a localization and not a globalization. And he comes back to that later. So within a culture, he thinks it's easy to fairly easy to implement, and you don't really have to coordinate with others on an international level because it's a local issue in a local context and culture. It does help, of course, to maybe rely on experiences or to know experiences others have made in other contexts, but it might not be that relevant in your own context, but it would help to look at it. And in general, confusion only starts when you start interacting with others outside your context and outside your language and outside your culture. So if cultural preservation is the priority and is the problem we're addressing, then it leads to isolation in a specific, up to a specific point. And with all the, you know, pros and cons that come with it. He basically says with all the traditional advantages of isolation. It's a bit ironic, I guess. But of course, if you isolate yourself and if you have a local environment, you can also close that, you know, to the rest of the world, to the rest of the internet, and you don't get contaminated with, like, you know, terminology or other conventions that do not, you know, apply to your own context or that are not compatible in your own culture. And he says that communication, also across boundaries, of course, aids development, integration with the rest of the world, and also international trade and commerce. If you want that, you might not want that in your local environment. So on the other hand, a global network, and all this just, you know, reads with a grain of salt because it's not really what he's suggesting. He comes back to that later and says, you know, basically, of course, you need both. So wait till the end before you get excited about it. So if you want a global network, on the other hand, a global network of people and of technology, and if you want to maximize communication on, you know, with other cultures on an international or a global level, then you need homogeneity and common conventions and protocols and languages. So then we're not talking about localization anymore, but it's really a common denominator with the rest of the network. It might be bad for maximum access and cultural preservation in your own culture, in your own country, in your own language, but that's the trade-off you have to make if you want to communicate on the global network. So he says the challenge is actually not how to build the best, most localized network, nor how to build the best globally integrated network, but the challenge is really to find the right balance between those two. So how can you create a localized network based on or, you know, layered upon the global internet and take advantage of both in a way? So what do we need from the global network? We need the ability to access any resources from anywhere. But that does not mean that if you're able to do that, you also have to do that, or you want to do that, or you're even able to understand the material you get through the internet. And you know that, you know, there's so much information on the internet, on the global network, and not everything is, you know, interesting and appropriate for you. So there might be, we might apply restrictions on the global internet, and for instance, to keep, you know, children away from inappropriate content. But it's not, the restrictions should not be based on the network design or on the technical infrastructure. It's basically an application and a policy decision. It's not really a technical decision. What else do we need from the global internet? We need to find things on the internet. We need navigation, search directories. You know, therefore, we also need names and that are accessible in local languages, but then not necessarily always in the global context. You would have to know where you are, if you are in a local context or if you are in the global context. So we also need ability to innovate and to drive commerce on the internet, on the global internet, internationally, he says, not just locally or domestically, without prior international agreement. So there must be a global convention or, you know, agreement about that. As close to real-time as possible. So, and you don't want that restricted by conversion gateways between different cultures, between different languages, between different contexts. So you want to have that immediately without those gateways in between, because they usually slow things down and you lose information in between translating different languages. And you see again, there's a lot of trade-offs to be made. So how can we satisfy all these needs? It says the requirements include a predictable global namespace, predictable global address space, but that doesn't necessarily have to be visible to the end user. That's the underlying you know, requirements, the underlying infrastructure that we need, but that's not something the end user really needs to care about. However, I'll skip this one. There must be content. That's what the user is interested in, he says. You know, content is is what gets users interested in the internet and what gets them, you know, use the internet. And content in the local language, in local culture, context. And users, he says, users don't want to navigate, they just want to find things on the internet. And you need mechanisms, you know, mechanisms to enter your and present your language on the internet, in your normal, well, on your local network in that case. So you need to have mechanisms to use your own culture and to use your own content and to present that on the net. So, and he says there at the bottom that the internet elements have been in place for a decade, but the local elements are still an issue. So the global mechanisms are there, but the local mechanisms we still have to work on. So what are these local elements or these local mechanisms we need to allow that for the, you know, local users? Well, you need character coding, and it's good if that would be part of a single international standard like Unicode, so we can cooperate better. And we need keyboards, screens, printers, operating systems, applications. There are a lot of languages that we don't really have a keyboard or have a way to enter data or content on the net. So that are all the things you need to work on and local, to apply local or to allow local content and to provide value for local users. So now he says, we've learned some lessons from the start of the internet in the 80s, he says, basically, and that are that networks, some lessons are that network protocols that are simple and have few options or no options, and are if there are options, then they are, you know, in band, they're not like made by the end user. Those protocols that are structured like that, they usually are able to be implemented, they get deployed, they are interoperate smoothly with other protocols, and they get spread quickly if they're useful and if users want them. On the other hand, complex designs, you know, they tend to be more complicated to implement. They do not really interoperate well, maybe, with other protocols. They require a lot of coordination to get deployed and take a long time and investment to implement them and to deploy them, develop them. And there's also a lot of coordination required to allow interoperability and interoperation between multi-vendors. So even if they might be better, experience shows that it's very hard to replace simple protocols and simple programs with more complex structures, more complex protocols, even if they might be better and provide more facilities, more features. So John thinks that it's a layer, basically. You have global addressing, you have global naming, and on top of that, you need localized references and local content. It doesn't need to replace the rest of the internet. You just need to put a layer on top of it, as long as it's not too complex. So to come back to names, presentations to users are always an abstraction, so names is not really something the user actually works with. Certainly not since we have Google, right? We don't really need to know the names anymore. We just search on the internet and we find the content we're looking for. But it's always, naming is always a compromise between culture and correctness on one side and simplicity on the other side. So maybe we need local user-appropriate names or references on top of these global structures, as was shown on the previous slide. So names themselves, they're not that exciting. They're used as mnemonics. They can be problematic because they might not work in all contexts and all cultures. Maybe the names are the answer to the wrong question, he says. And users rarely use domain names. We see that. I mean, how often do you remember a particular URI or URL and you really put that in? You'd rather use other search mechanisms on the net to find your content that you're looking for. So he feels that names might not be the way to go to solve that particular problem he has described here. So what do we have to do in order to solve these problems? Well, there are many complex problems. And the most interesting and the most difficult to solve, of course, are at the very root of language, culture, cultural preservation, and that's not a technical issue. That's a more social issue, cultural issue, and that's hard to solve. But we should not duplicate efforts. He says if one solution already exists or if people are already working on one solution, then we need to coordinate that and try not to duplicate efforts and waste time and energy. And on the other hand, if something is historically reasonably well handled, then it would need a good reason to do the same work again. Also, you might as well use that same solution that has been used there. So, in closing, he gives some recommendations and some conclusions. And basically, to summarize, is local content is critical. That's what users want, and that's what will make users use the internet and learn about the internet. It's also important to have local navigation and other facilities to use the internet to find content. And he says that should be above and not instead of global naming and addressing. So remember that layered model that he showed earlier. And it's also important to have the freedom to develop local content, to develop good local ideas, and to get things right culturally without making a compromise with the rest of the world. So again, it's a balance there. It's an imbalance between localization and international, access to the international or the global communications network. And he says at the end that users need to know when they switch from local to global content or context. You need to know if you're in your local network, in your local environment, in your local language, and then you switch to the internet, users will need to know that. And tools can help that. So tools can help to support that, to switch between those two contexts. So preservation of a global network without gateways and information loss and without national profiles, specific profiles, is the key to world communication and economic development. It's his last words. So I hope I did a good job as being a John Clanson. I don't know. Any questions? Was that clear? Thank you. I wonder if he's listening and tell me later what I did wrong.
My name is Yaovi Atum from Benin. It's not clear to me when the presenter said that people, they don't use rarely domain names. It's not clear to me. Because it is easy for me to have a name and go directly to the content than using a search engine to find the content. My next comment is, when people talk about content, I agree with local content, but local language is another issue people have to deal with locally, because we want everybody to have access to the content. So we need to put our content in some languages that many people can have access to. So I think it is very important for us to do some works at a local level. Because if you take our local language, how many people in our country can write and read our local language? So we need to do some work at a local level. Because in our country, we speak French or English. But we have very few countries. I know some countries in Africa, they are using in the public administration, they are using their local language. So there are some progress in some countries or some situation different. But there are other countries, even if you want to put local content on the internet, they have to be in international languages. So it's just a content that we need to make a difference between local content and local language. And there are some work we have to do at the local level. Even we are speaking French or English, we need to learn how to write and how to read our local language. I think it is something we need some years to do. We have to start doing it, but we need times to achieve this. Yeah, thank you.
I think he would agree with that. And on this one slide, you saw also where you said you need keyboards and printers and operating system that can actually handle all this. You know, and as you say, in the meantime, there might not be a way to actually produce local content because you don't have all these support facilities.
I think the point there, Mark Elkins, I think the point there was literacy rather than, I mean, people not even being able to read and write, full stop.
Alex from Kenya. Is there a possibility of ISOC maybe helping us throughout Africa to have a sort of a cultural portal to make the internet more relevant so that literacy and all these other issues, if there's internet that speaks in my language, it would be very nice for me to have internet in any way. And I have an example, one called jaluo.com, which is one of the Kenyan cultural languages, and I tell you, so many people go there, so boring on that. Thank you.
I think that's an excellent task for the chapters.
I have an idea that I'd like to throw out. This is Norbert Bollo from Switzerland, although my friend tells me that I'm almost Kenyan now. So I wonder if there would be, it would make sense to create a language, an artificial language that can be translated automatically into any human target language. We all know that parsing natural languages automatically is close to impossible. Generating readable text, even if it's not good literature, but it's at least readable and understandable, that's much, much easier. So I wonder if that's maybe something that would make sense to explore on the continent with as many different languages as we have here. Thank you.
It's an interesting idea. I don't know if that's part of what that can be taken up maybe by the IDN Africa project that the next speaker will talk about. Unless there's one more question in the back. Do you want to find a microphone?
Yeah, good morning. I think another problem that we need to factor in is the fact that majority of those that the internet needs to reach cannot read and write. So I think the ITDN, or I don't know what the other arm of this that deals with this, but I think a way of using voice recognition system on the internet, I think that might be something useful. Where I've seen in India, for example, you have kiosks that are put in villages that are very, very useful to farmers and community people who typically cannot read and write. So it's okay to look at translation languages, but I think it's also important to see how these languages or content on the internet can actually utilize voice that will reach the majority of the people who cannot read and write. Thank you.
Something that strikes me about the language issue is that on the UNESCO website, many of our languages are actually dying and are going extinct. So that really we do have to find some kind of mechanism to, I would say, conserve, not necessarily preserve, you know. And I think it's something that we really, really need to address. I know that going to the sites, I was particularly interested in Nigeria, and they had identified 27 languages so far, which the primary speakers are either middle age or old age, which basically implies that in the next 10 years, those languages will not exist. And a particular example I know in northern Nigeria is, I think there's a small tribe, about 10,000 people. And the interesting thing is that they're not actually being wiped out by English. They're being wiped out by Hausa, you see. But Hausa itself is under a threat from English. So I think that the internet, ICTs generally, will provide some very, very interesting possibilities that, frankly, we've just not thought about, and we need to think about.
Thank you for these good comments and suggestions, and I hope to remember them later and maybe write a report and also encourage the chapters to help work on that. So can I invite the next speaker, Alex? Do you want to use your own laptop or,
May I ask people to switch on French? the slides are mainly in English. You can see that I'm both, and there's some word in French, some word in English, so it can be a multilingualism. Speak. Okay, donc today I have to talk, je dois parler, donc merci d'abord à Mirjam de me donner l'opportunité donc de parler un peu d'un projet que nous avons lancé concernant justement les langues et un projet qui s'appelle de manière plus précise Unicode and IDN Africa. Ce projet a été lancé l'année dernière, en septembre. Et il a réuni, juste avant le sommet de Tunis, il a réuni un certain nombre, une cinquantaine d'experts africains avec des partenaires étrangers, donc avec l'appui d'Internet Society, d'Affilias et de l'autorité de régulation du Sénégal. Et on a essayé d'aborder trois thèmes particuliers au cours de ces sessions qui concernaient donc l'internalisation de notre domaine, AGCI, et le deuxième thème a été de regarder les différents aspects et les problèmes portés par le multilinguisme sur Internet, quels sont ces aspects, quels sont les intérêts, quelles sont les problématiques. Et puis on a essayé aussi de faire un surveil des expertises africaines. Alors, bien sûr, cet atelier, en fait, n'est que le démarrage de quelque chose que nous voulons beaucoup plus grand et qui devienne un projet qui puisse vraiment intéresser toute la communauté et qui puisse conduire réellement à la prise en compte spécifique de cette problématique. Comme vous le savez, au cours du sommet mondial de la société de l'information, une recommandation forte a été la prise en compte du multilinguisme. Et on sait que pour atteindre le développement de notre continent, un aspect extrêmement important, c'est la contribution, l'accès à tous à l'information, qu'on ait réellement un Internet qui soit accessible à l'entière population. Et on sait qu'aujourd'hui, les problèmes d'accès dont on parle concernent un bon nombre de la population qui se trouve dans le monde rural. Et deuxièmement, le taux d'illettrisme en Afrique est quand même beaucoup plus élevé que dans les pays du Nord. Et donc, il y a encore toute une cible, toute une population qui est concernée par cette problématique. Ce que nous avons, quel est l'objectif de cet atelier, quel est l'objectif de ce projet, Unicode ID in Africa, c'est de promouvoir les contenus africains à partir des langues africaines, à partir du propre contexte culturel, linguistique de chacun des peuples qui composent ce continent. Alors, il est bien entendu que cela passe obligatoirement par la prise en compte au niveau technique de ces langues, de la mise en place d'outils, comme a dit tout à l'heure Myrjam, sur les différents aspects justement techniques qui sont liés à la promotion de cet Internet, les claviers, les écrans, le codage des caractères, etc. Alors, ce que je veux vous présenter, c'est à peu près comment le projet a voulu se dessiner, comment il a été structuré, et surtout voir à peu près quels sont les objectifs que nous voyons vis-à-vis de ces différents thèmes que nous allons retenir au cours de ce projet. Alors, le projet a décidé de travailler sur trois aspects spécifiques. Tout d'abord, le recensement des langages et des scripts existants en Afrique. Majoritairement, les langues africaines ne sont pas des langues écrites, sont des langues orales, et sont le plus souvent retranscrites en utilisant des alphabets existants, que ce soit l'alphabet romain, que ce soit les lettres arabes, les scripts arabes, mais en tout état de cause, si l'on fait le recensement des langues qui sont orales, majoritairement, elles existent sous une forme retranscrite. Donc, il doit être possible quelque part de regarder quels sont les scripts spécifiques qu'il faudrait peut-être créer pour prendre en compte ces différents langages et répertorier l'ensemble des langues. Deuxième volet important de ce projet, c'est concernant justement ces familles de langues, parce que les travaux des linguistes africains ont montré qu'il y a de très grandes familles de langues qui couvrent au-delà d'un pays, une région africaine. Je crois que l'exemple du Swahili est ici pour nous le montrer, où le Swahili couvre non pas un pays, mais vraiment la région de l'Est africain. De regarder, pour la prise en compte des particularités justement linguistiques, regarder comment la codification de ces langues peut se faire via Unicode. Aujourd'hui, nous savons que, globalement, ce projet est le projet leader dans la retranscription des langues. Et il y a déjà des réussites extrêmement fortes en Afrique. Et je crois que je tiens à particulièrement mettre en évidence, par exemple, le cas de l'Amérique en Éthiopie, qui a pu, dans un processus extrêmement bien détaillé, arriver à mettre en place donc, la codification de l'Amérique au niveau de Unicode, et donc de permettre justement la prise en compte de ces particularismes linguistiques forts de cette population au sein d'Internet. Et donc de créer un contenu en Amérique sur Internet à destination des populations locales et bien sûr aussi du monde entier. La troisième partie, c'est IDN, donc l'International Domain Name, les noms de domaine. Et je crois qu'il est beaucoup plus simple pour nos utilisateurs finaux d'utiliser des concepts et des langues et des mots qui sont plus proches de leur culture pour pouvoir approcher des domaines ou des idées ou bien des contenus. Et donc, il paraît évident que leur demander de taper Google, ce qui ne signifie rien dans nos langues, peut-être que trouver un mot qui veut dire chercher dans des différents dialectes ou langues permettra à la personne de comprendre que taper ce mot lui permet plus facilement de trouver ce qu'il recherche. Et je pense que c'était peut-être un des aspects intéressants, justement, de voir comment passer à l'expérimentation, justement, de l'internalisation des noms de domaine. Pour un autre aspect économique qui est peut-être important avec l'internalisation des noms de domaine, c'est un peu ce qui s'est passé en Allemagne. La mise en place de l'internalisation des noms de domaine en Allemagne, en utilisant simplement les quelques caractères allemands qui n'étaient pas pris en compte dans le codage du DNS, a permis d'augmenter le nom de domaine, je crois, de plus de 50%. Il y a eu un taux énorme, je ne sais pas, Myriam a peut-être, quelqu'un a peut-être plus de données précises sur ça, mais CCTLD DE a montré que la mise en place justement de ce protocole d'internationalisation lui a permis d'accroître énormément la présence de l'allemand au niveau d'Internet. Alors pour ce faire, nous avons invité bien sûr au cours de cet atelier un certain nombre de partenaires techniques qui ont déjà une forte expertise dans le domaine. Africains, nous avons travaillé bien sûr avec l'Académie africaine des langues, la CALAN, qui se trouve au Mali. Nous avons fait appel, nous avons convié à cet atelier Bicharat, tout le monde connaît, qui a fait le travail. Le projet NCO, qui est une langue un peu, dont, comme disait tout à l'heure, une langue un peu transversale, qui essaie de se mettre en place pour justement prendre en compte nos spécificités linguistiques. Et nous avons aussi eu la présence de l'Arabic Internet Name Consortium, qui était présent au cours de ces débats. Et au niveau international, Clinsin, dont on a montré un peu un exposé, était présent. Jamsung de Taïwan, les Taïwanais ont une forte expertise aussi, justement, dans l'internalisation, dans la localisation. Et Michael Heverson, Affilias, bien sûr, Ikan, Isoc, et puis d'autres registries étaient présents. Que veut-on faire dans les différents volets dont on a parlé? Dans le cadre du recensement, nous avons comme projet de mettre en place un répertoire des langues africaines des scripts. Alors, il y a beaucoup de travaux qui ont été menés au sein de la CALAN, au sein de différents projets. Il s'agit maintenant d'avoir peut-être une vision commune de tout ce qu'ils ont fait, et surtout de regarder un peu qu'est-ce qu'on peut partager à ce niveau-là. Donc, et puis, bien sûr, étudier la situation de ces langues et des scripts qui sont utilisés dans les Africains, par les Africains, de manière à avoir une cartographie la plus large possible. Le but dans cet aspect, c'est plutôt d'arriver, bien sûr, à avoir vraiment un répertoire des scripts utiles, de telle façon à voir si leur prise en compte par la deuxième partie du projet, qui est la partie Unicode, puisse être efficace et être utile. Ceci va, bien sûr, nécessiter de mettre en place une forte communauté linguistique, de linguistes appliqués autour, justement, des techniciens pour pouvoir le faire. Alors, nous avons déjà à peu près proposé un comité de lancement, et un comité de coordination, je vous dirai tout à l'heure comment ça s'est fait, et nous pensons que les informations viendront de consultations, de documents qui existent déjà, de missions peut-être d'approche au niveau des différents sites, et puis d'ateliers régionaux qui pourraient être mis en place. Ça, c'est le premier objectif, un des premiers travaux de ce projet. Le deuxième travail, bien sûr, qui est subséquent à celui qui vient d'être édicté, c'est de travailler sur la mise en place d'un codage de ces caractères spécifiques, ou bien après, identification, bien entendu. Si les caractères existent déjà dans Unicode, il s'agit simplement de les répertorier et de les mettre en place. Il y a une problématique quand même qui est très forte. Cela nécessite que ces langues soient formalisées et codées de manière uniforme dans tous les pays où elles sont parlées. C'est-à-dire que c'est un problème réglementaire aussi, parce qu'il y a un problème justement d'une approche réglementaire. Nous avons des langues qui sont parlées de différentes, qui sont écrites de différentes façons, suivant les régions, tout simplement, parce que les codificateurs n'ont pas eu de manière de travail consensuel.
Le but du projet, bien sûr, c'est d'arriver à une codification uniforme d'une famille linguistique. Et à partir de là, déterminer quels sont les scripts qui feront défaut dans le projet Unicode et de travailler, bien sûr, à la prise en compte dans le projet Unicode. Alors, ce qu'on a pensé qui est plus pragmatique et qui peut être fait dès maintenant, c'est de travailler sur 4 ou 6 langages qui sont déjà codifiés, qui sont connus, qui sont travaillés, etc., qui sont basés soit sur des familles de langages, soit sur une répartition géographique, pour faire un pilote de ce projet et essayer de voir ce que ça va donner en termes de besoin en codification. À partir de là, déterminer les tables qu'il faudrait insérer dans le travail Unicode, et bien sûr, travailler sur la prise en compte par les claviers. La mise en place de claviers est extrêmement importante. Alors, bien sûr, dans cette partie, je dis un peu, nous avons essayé de détailler un peu les actions qui vont être menées. Il s'agit de voir ce qu'il a fait. Une fois que ce travail a été fait, il faudra bien sûr qu'on travaille avec les grands constructeurs de systèmes d'exploitation et de logiciels pour la prise en compte de ces nouvelles tables Unicode dans ce système. Et puis, bien sûr, essayer bien sûr de diffuser ces outils. La troisième phase du projet, troisième aspect, c'est l'aspect d'internationalisation des noms de domaine. Alors, dans ce projet, je crois que techniquement, nous connaissons à peu près la problématique. Nous avons proposé, du moins de cet atelier, il est ressorti qu'il faudrait implémenter IDN sur au moins 2 pays, en phase pilote aussi, pour regarder quelles sont les problématiques réellement intéressantes dans la mise en place de, justement, cet IDN, ce système d'internalisation des noms de domaine, pour pouvoir dégager vraiment une problématique et des perspectives pour la diffusion de cette internationalisation des noms de domaine, en regardant quelles sont les tables variantes pour l'enrichissement, de mettre en place la politique, les polices, du moins, les stratégies et surtout les chartes d'utilisation de ces nouveaux caractères, de ces nouvelles tables, de regarder quel est l'impact réel de cette politique sur la prise en compte et la diffusion de l'Internet au niveau des zones géographiques couvertes par les langues utilisées, et non pas dans les pays. Il faudrait trouver des zones, des pays, des langues qui sont à peu près générales. Alors, bien sûr, cela nécessite qu'il y ait des essences techniques, qu'on étudie aussi le business autour de ce système, trouver des partenaires, des missions, bien entendu, et tout ça. Et à l'issue de cette phase d'identification des deux pays et la mise en place de cette charte, des best practices, déterminer des bonnes pratiques, essayer d'arriver à une généralisation de cette politique de mise en place des NOMEDEM auprès, bien sûr, des nations, de nos politiques telles que l'Union africaine, le NEPAD, etc. Bien sûr, il nous a apparu, bien entendu, que ceci nécessitera des moyens et qu'il faudra bien déterminer là-dessus aussi une stratégie de financement autour de ce programme. Alors, nous avons travaillé aussi également sur l'organisation globale du projet pour essayer de trouver une structure qui soit à même d'être efficace, efficiente et soit opérationnelle aussi dans un court terme. Alors, le projet Unicode d'Afrique, c'est en fait ce cercle qui contiendrait trois grosses équipes. Une équipe de coordination, dont je vais parler tout à l'heure, une équipe linguistique et une équipe technique. Parce que je crois qu'il ne faut pas que les techniciens croient qu'ils sont les seuls à pouvoir faire ça. Sans l'aide d'un linguiste et surtout la complexité justement de nos langues, il est important que nous ayons des linguistes autour de nous pour pouvoir nous appuyer. Alors, il y aura bien sûr le conseil consultatif des organisations internationales, puisqu'il faudra s'appuyer sur un certain nombre d'appuis, et aussi un comité des bailleurs de fonds qui va nous servir à appuyer ce projet. Et bien sûr, il y aura des liens très forts avec toutes les organisations Unicode, W3C, BET, ICAD, AFTLD, la FTLD, surtout dans le cadre de l'IDN, je crois que c'est un partenaire essentiel. Et avec ce programme, nous pensons trouver justement des appuis et pouvoir déterminer très rapidement, mettre en opérationnel au moins ces pilotes que nous avec cette organisation. Alors, pour passer vraiment en termes pratiques, de cet atelier, il s'est dégagé la mise en place d'un comité de pilotage, des personnes des ressources qui étaient présentes. Et j'en profite justement de ces opportunités pour lancer un appel pour que nous puissions avancer dans ce projet dans un très très court délai. Bien sûr, vous reconnaîtrez là que, que le comité de pilotage, c'est trois personnes incontournables de l'Internet en Afrique. Pierre Dandjinou, Pierre Ouédraogo, parce que c'est sur ces pierres que l'on bâtit notre église, hein, je tiens à le dire. C'est le socle de ces travaux. Pierre Dandjinou avec le PNUD, Pierre Ouédraogo avec la francophonie ont été vraiment des appuis essentiels dans un certain nombre de forums que nous avons pu avoir, ont vraiment apporté un soutien très fort. Ils ont un carnet d'adresses qui me paraît très très intéressant et qu'il faudrait peut-être qu'on polisse à fond. Et puis Mohamed Diop de ICANN, qui est parti du board d'ICANN, nous avons pensé que ces trois personnes étaient vraiment des personnes à même de pouvoir lancer cette initiative et pouvoir vraiment nous mettre sur les rails d'un système vraiment opérationnel. De cette réunion qui a réuni quand même beaucoup de pays, nous avons décidé de mettre en place deux sous-comités. Donc vous allez voir que nous avons, parmi ceux qui étaient là, nous avons pu déterminer un certain nombre de compétences qui ont accepté de se mettre en place. Et il nous manque encore à déterminer un certain nombre de personnes ressources. Par exemple, dans le cas du sous-comité linguistique, l'Afrique australe n'est pas représentée. Donc s'il y a, vous connaissez un projet ou une personne ressource linguistique qui connaissent bien ce projet et qui seraient prêts à y rentrer, je crois que ça nous serait très intéressant. Et puis nous avons pensé qu'il était important que l'Union africaine, puisque l'Union africaine est le chapeau de l'Académie africaine des langues, ACALAN, donc elle pourrait avoir à ce moment-là un soutien institutionnel relativement fort pour justement la suite qui sera donnée à ce projet. Pour le comité TIC, nous avons essayé d'avoir la même répartition avec les pays. Nous n'avons malheureusement pas pu avoir de représentants d'Afrique du Nord, d'Afrique du Sud, pour pouvoir se joindre à ce programme, pour pouvoir commencer déjà à travailler sur la partie technologique. Donc c'est aussi un appel que nous lançons ici. Si vous avez des personnes cibles ou des personnes qui seraient intéressées, ce serait très intéressant de le faire savoir, pour que nous puissions terminer sur la mise en place de ce comité provisoire. Alors, quel est le travail, quel est le terme de référence du travail que nous sommes désignés? C'est de consolider le plan de travail du projet, d'établir les termes de référence des consultations qui seront nécessaires, si nécessaire aussi bien entendu à ce moment-là, déterminer et trouver les consultants qui vont effectuer les tâches, organiser les ateliers régionaux. Nous comptons en faire dans chaque région, que ce soit donc les régions de l'Internet, les régions africaines que nous connaissons, aussi bien que les régions linguistiques, parce que ça devient important. D'appuyer la structuration de sous-régionaux nationaux, régionaux, et surtout déterminer les moyens d'assurer leur animation. De documenter le projet et de produire un livre blanc sur l'automatisation des langues nationales, qui servira en fait de document de référence, nous pensons, pour toutes les initiatives locales. D'assurer bien sûr la promotion de ce projet tant au niveau africain qu'international. D'établir les partenariats stratégiques avec les institutions africaines et internationales. Et aussi avec les entreprises spécialisées dans le domaine. Et puis surtout, de mobiliser les ressources nécessaires à la mise en place de ce projet. Voilà l'ambition que nous avons sur ce projet, qui déjà a bénéficié déjà d'un crédit, je crois, d'intérêt d'un certain nombre de personnes que nous avons appuyées, surtout des linguistes, parce que nous avons été surpris de l'intérêt des linguistes qui voyaient là un moyen de travail extraordinaire et qui pensaient qu'on les avait oubliés complètement. Et donc, qu'est-ce qui reste à faire maintenant, à partir après ce projet, c'est bien sûr de choisir les pilotes, aussi bien en termes codage des langues qu'en termes internalisation des noms de domaine. Et nous pensons que le calendrier à peu près logique devrait permettre de se faire dans les 6 mois, avoir un premier résultat, puisqu'on pense que le recensement des langues africaines, il s'agit d'une compilation de documents déjà existants dans pas mal d'institutions. Rien que, par exemple, pour l'Afrique de l'Ouest, nous avons vu qu'il y avait à Niamey des études très fortes qui avaient été faites, y compris même le clavier africain. L'Académie africaine des langues a une compilation de documents. L'Institut fondamental d'Afrique noire, qui se trouve à Dakar, a aussi énormément de documents. Et nous pensons au Nigeria, il nous a été donné justement beaucoup de sites de référence où il y a énormément de documents et de travaux à exploiter qui sont déjà là, présents, mais qui n'ont simplement pas été exploités. Et donc nous pensons que le recensement, si l'équipe vraiment travaille bien, peut être fait en moins de 2 mois. Et les codifications sur les langues cibles, bien sûr, puisque c'est des langues régionales, ne devraient pas prendre trop de temps, puisque dans les langues cibles, ce seraient des langues qui sont un peu, qui transversent les frontières. L'exemple du Bambara a été donné, l'exemple du Swahili, d'autres exemples existent, bien entendu, où il y a peut-être des travaux à faire. Hein. Je sais, l'Afrique du Sud a fait ce travail, je crois, dans un délai relativement court, quand il s'agit, par exemple, de localiser Open Office dans les langues nationales sud-africaines. Ça a été fait avec un truc. Donc, il y a des modèles africains, bien entendu, sur lesquels il faut s'inspirer. C'est très important. La codification devrait prendre dans les 6 mois. Et nous pensons aussi que le projet IDN peut démarrer dans les 6 mois. Voilà ce que nous voulons faire. Donc, nous tenons à vous en faire part. Alors, quels sont les contacts? Les contacts, bien sûr, c'est le comité de coordination. Donc, vous avez les mails. Donc, il s'agit de Mohamed Diop, que vous avez déjà vu ici, Pierre Ouedraogo et Pierre Nandjinou. Et bien sûr, à partir de... Nous n'avons pas encore de site web, nous allons mettre en place tout ce qu'il faut faire autour pour justement essayer de populariser ce projet. Et je tiens à remercier encore une fois Isoc et Afilias qui nous ont permis de lancer les premières étapes de ce projet, en espérant que d'ici, avant le prochain AFNORG, nous viendrons avec carrément des sites web qui seront visibles et des réalisations concrètes sur ce programme. Je vous remercie. Je tiens encore à vous rappeler, nous attendons la contribution de tout le monde. Ce n'est pas fermé, c'est ouvert. Et actuellement, nous voulons vraiment que tout le monde s'y insère, puisque je crois que la problématique n'est pas locale, elle est globale. Et pour atteindre les objectifs du millénaire dont on a parlé tout à l'heure, il faut que nous appuyions sur nos populations rurales et sur les ressources locales dont nous disposons. Je vous remercie. Maybe there are some questions. Mr. Pierre Ouedraogo va sûrement contribuer.
Je voudrais d'abord, je pense, féliciter le professeur Corentin pour la brillante présentation. Et je voudrais aussi profiter de l'occasion pour donner 2 informations. D'abord, premièrement, en ce qui concerne la codification, et en tant que membre du comité technique Unicode, du consortium Unicode, appeler donc les différentes personnes qui sont ici et qui ne sont pas là et qui auraient des projets dans ce sens, parce que il faut avancer partout en même temps sans attendre. S'il y a déjà des projets, des difficultés en cours, de me contacter dans le cadre, disons, de ce travail. Et deuxièmement aussi, dit que dans le cadre de l'Association africaine des utilisateurs de logiciels libres, nous avons actuellement un projet en cours qui, je pense, devrait être prêt pour être présenté aux rencontres africaines des logiciels libres à Rabat en novembre 2006, de localisation de la suite Open Office dans 3 langues de l'Afrique de l'Ouest. Donc ce travail est en cours et il sera achevé d'ici là. Et en fait, nous l'avons commencé, enfin nous avons eu l'idée de le faire en 2004, quand on a constaté qu'il y avait dans une petite ville du Burkina des prêtres qui avaient traduit dans ces trois langues déjà les dictionnaires pour OpenOffice. Et ils sont venus à la rencontre, à la première rencontre africaine des logiciels libres, nous dit, ah, on ne savait pas que vous existiez, mais nous, on a fait ça. On s'est dit, bon, s'ils ont déjà les dictionnaires, eh bien, on devrait travailler sur autre chose, et donc on est en train d'avancer. Il y a aussi, bien sûr, SPIP en fond, etc. Il y a des tas d'autres de projets en cours. Et je pense que la conclusion, c'est que chacun, là où il est, s'il peut bouger, il faut qu'il bouge. Merci.
Merci Pierre. Pierre Dandino, tu rapproches ton micro. Oui, que je vous avais dit que c'est sur les pierres que s'appuie.
Merci beaucoup. Je ne sais pas si ce sont les mêmes pierres, mais bon. Non, je crois que je voulais féliciter Alès effectivement pour ce rapport. Et bon, dit quand même que c'est une initiative. C'est vrai qu'on a, eu Pierre O et Mohamed un mois donné, lorsque la discussion était en cours sur l'internationalisation d'un autre domaine. Donc, on avait pensé effectivement qu'il y avait des choses à faire au niveau africain. Mais je veux juste rappeler deux ou trois choses qui me semblent importantes. Je pense que le PNUD s'est intéressé à cette affaire-là parce que d'abord, c'est davantage du développement des capacités qu'il s'agit. Alors, capacité, je dirais, d'accès à l'information et au savoir dans les langues endogènes. Je crois que c'était ça qui nous intéressait. Parce que pour nous, c'était un conduit, n'est-ce pas, pour le développement, la réduction de la pauvreté, les histoires comme ça. Alors, maintenant, peut-être par rapport au démarrage de ce projet, je pense qu'il faut insister, comme tu l'as fait, sur la multidisciplinarité. Je crois que c'est très, très important parce que les linguistes, ils voient un peu les choses par rapport à leur discipline. Mais en fait, les informaticiens aussi ont beaucoup un rôle à jouer là-dedans. Et il faut que cette équipe-là fonctionne, au niveau africain. Je crois que le partenariat est essentiel. Bon, nous avons déjà commencé à discuter avec certains. Je sais par exemple que, pour ne pas citer des noms, mais nous pensons que ça ne peut décoller que si nous avons non seulement la volonté, mais je crois que le business doit être derrière. C'est très important et on a quelques approches, mais ce serait bien qu'au niveau africain, un travail se fasse pour densifier ce partenariat. Bon, pour les pilotes, c'est vrai, à Dakar, on a sélectionné, on voudrait sélectionner quelques pays pour qu'on puisse avoir des succès à montrer. Mais je pense qu'ici, nous avons besoin que ceux qui ont une idée des initiatives dans leur région, dans leur pays, puissent nous les relayer. Parce que c'est un projet qui veut être vraiment inclusif. Tout le monde doit être, n'est-ce pas, faire partie de ça. Comment je voudrais dire, il n'a pas parlé des risques Corentin. Mais j'imagine que vous voyez tous qu'il y a beaucoup de risques. Hein? C'est déjà au niveau de la coordination. Je crois que cette affaire, nous l'avons discutée à trois pendant des mois. Et n'eût été un peu l'appui, n'est-ce pas, de ISOC, Affilias et autres, on n'aurait vraiment rien fait, il faut le dire. Donc c'est un appel, franchement, pour la collaboration au niveau africain. On a parlé de NEPAD, on a parlé de truc africain, l'Union africaine, c'est bien. Moi, je pense que c'est la stratégie de financement de tout ça qu'il faut avoir et qu'il faut être réaliste, ok. Et donc, c'est cela que j'aimerais insister. Je voudrais insister sur le fait qu'on puisse être novateur dans la recherche de financement parce que nous avons vu que ce n'est pas l'expertise qui manque. À Dakar, on avait plein de linguistes. Et moi, je sais qu'il y a plein de ressources. Bon, on n'a pas parlé de l'Afrique australe, mais il y a beaucoup de travaux qui ont été faits dans ce domaine. comment est-ce qu'on remonte, n'est-ce pas, ceci? Il faut des ressources. J'imagine qu'on ne doit pas continuer éternellement à tendre la main vers le nord pour ça. Si nous pensons que c'est une aventure qui va entraîner peut-être le développement, l'accès du plus grand nombre. Il faut que ça rentre dans les priorités quelque part. Et moi, c'est ce que j'aimerais voir. Merci.
Merci, Pierre.
To follow up on the last speaker, what kind of creative public-private partnerships can we look forward to for funding of these kind of things? I know, for example, that Microsoft, I know most people here are not fans of Microsoft, but Microsoft is funding something for their own self-interest, obviously. But can we find ways to leverage on that kind of funding source?
Yes, indeed. I think that's mainly the problem we face, and we want to have some people discussing about. We are true about Microsoft, but there is something new in Microsoft because Jara is coming, and is Africa. He's coming in Senegal and signed for the making open office in Wolof. So I think we can act with these people to know how we can finance maybe some searcher, some people who want to work on this side. It's not a problem. I think you have only what Pierre said. We need to have a strategic plan. We have to make a business plan also, and in this way we can go through. Boss.
Well, good morning. My name is Ni Kweno. I think the languages involved are many. The last time I checked at Akalan site, Ghana had more than 50. So you can imagine if you multiply by 50, you know, you get in the thousands. Okay, I like to suggest that a group that is very capable, such as the African Wren, really get involved with you, or you have to co-opt them, so that maybe they could use the academic capacity they have, their student power, their research knowledge, and so on, so that we can maybe make the process easier or almost automated, whatever you call it. But I think trying to tap into that capacity may be a very useful thing for the effort at this time. Thank you.
Thanks. Yaouvi, and after.
Merci. Je remercie l'équipe pour le travail qui se fait, parce que je trouve que c'est un projet intéressant. Ma contribution, c'est par rapport aux ressources. Vu les ressources qui sont limitées, moi, je proposerais au comité de cibler les pays où l'alphabétisation est très avancée. Il y a des pays africains, quand vous allez aujourd'hui, dans les administrations, vous avez les documents dans les deux langues. Bon, j'étais au Rwanda il y a quelques années, mais je crois que c'est la même chose. Des pays comme ça où vous avez tous les documents officiels dans les deux langues, dans la langue locale, où tout le monde lit ça, tout le monde travaille. Donc, je proposerais qu'on donne la priorité à ces langues. Comme ça, ça permet de bénéficier directement de ce projet et de faire avancer les pays. Donc, comme les ressources sont limitées, quand on prend un pays à une cinquantaine de langues, moi, je crois qu'il faut se concentrer d'abord sur les pays. Je ne dis pas qu'il faut laisser le reste. On doit tout faire, mais vraiment prioriser les choses. Merci.
Je rappellerai juste que l'on va se focaliser que sur 6 langues. Donc, majeures. Et on avait décidé de se focaliser sur chaque région où il y a 6 régions linguistiques. Donc, c'est pour vous montrer qu'on a compris la taille de ce problème. Please.
Thank you very much for the very exciting presentation. I was just wondering whether your terms of reference in the translating and availing content in local languages is restricted to the internet, because what I would imagine is that it would be probably very easy to avail some of this content even using the technologies that people already have. For example, the penetration of mobile phones in Africa. It's almost everybody, I mean, it's even in the villages, have an access somehow to a mobile phone. If we had the keyboards in the local languages and they text one another like that, you know, this would be the beginning, because I cannot imagine everybody, I cannot imagine the laptops and PCs in big numbers. I was just wondering, I don't know. Thank you.
Thanks, I think the last communication. What I want just to respond to you is, okay, we get in mind this kind of things, but what we want only is this codification need to be global. If you make it for your country, it can be accessible wherever the people come. So if the people is in US, this you need to be able to transmit a mail or a web page or something like that in this type of codification. Is why we are looking to have something global. Universal codification, like in Unicode, and there's a lot of works done on the keyboards. But the main problem, when we look after this problem, the main problem is there is a lot of keyboards for one language, because there is no uniform codification. It's not a uniform question. If you see, I just take in mind one example for the Bambara. Who's speaking almost in West Africa, each country has developed its own codification. That's the difficulty. That's we want to, we need first to have something clear, because we can work on this side. Thank you, and a bientôt. A bientôt.
Yeah, thank you very much. And yes, you'll be seen later this afternoon again up here. I know. Can I invite Mohamed El-Bashir to come up here? He is the he's a member of the ICANN IDN Standards Committee, as well as the ICANN's President's Advisory Committee, I think. And he would give us an update of what ICANN's involvement in that is, and what ICANN's Standards Committee on IDN is doing. Oh, okay, that would have been easier for me too.
Thank you very much, ISOC, for giving me the opportunity. Oh, sorry. Thank you very much, ISOC, for giving me the opportunity to present some information about the current IDN status within ICANN. I'm not an ICANN staff, but I'm involved in different ICANN organizations, the CCNSO. And the ICANN IDN Standards Committee and the ICANN President Advisory Committee on ICANN. It's a long name, we call it IDN PAC. My name is Mohamed El-Bashir, I'm managing .sd registry. I'm the chairman of Sudan Internet Society as well. Basically, I think the question why IDN have been went through a lot of time. And the internet demography is rapidly changing now. And there's huge numbers of non-English speakers are in the internet now. So there is a huge need for local content development, and IDN is a part of that process. IDN have a huge push, and it's gained more momentum through the WSIS process, because on the WSIS process, it was clearly stated that we need a we should work toward a more multilingual internet environment, and we should push the local content development in our countries. We can say that IDN has become a mature technology now. and deployments in the Arabic world, huge deployment in China, Japan, Taiwan, Asia-Pacific area. This is a business card for a friend who's working in the Assistant Store Council, and you can see that the URL is in Japanese, and he have an email address too in Japanese. So it's something real, it's something, it's beyond experimental now, and people are using it for about 3 or 4 years from now. And even from the application side, currently lots of applications are supporting IDNs. And this is a result of search in Google, and you can see that the URL is in Japanese, I guess. So there's lots of application currently, and lots of development on the application side to support IDNs. This is a list of TLD registries who have some sort of IDN implementation. And you can see the range varies from gTLDs and ccTLDs as well. But there is huge movement, and it's going rapidly on the ccTLD community. I will give more information about two committees in the ICANN that deal with IDN. The first one is IDN TLD Working Group. And IDN TLD Working Group is a working group that consists of gTLD registries members and ccTLD members. And I'm representing the CCNSO Council on that working group. The working group main task is to revise an IDN guidelines that has been, the first version has been announced in 2003. And the guidelines are generally standards for applying IDN registration policies and practices. And in the first version, registries that have agreements with ICANN, they were authorized to implement IDN on basis of the IDN guidelines. The recent version of the IDN guidelines is version 2.1. It has been released recently. And if you went to the website, icann.org/topic/IDN, you can find the latest version of the IDN guidelines. There's another committee working on IDN within the ICANN. It's called ICANN President's Advisory Committee on IDN, or IDN-PAC. IDN-PAC is a group of experts from around the world, from different multi-stakeholders, governments, technical bodies, private sector, NGOs. And the main objective of that committee is to provide advice to ICANN on IDN implementation and IDN general issues and policies, and strengthens the coordination on a global scale on IDN. Recently, if you went to the ICANN website, the advisory committee have put a proposal for an IDN technical test. And the IDN technical test have two approaches currently. Technically, it's there's the test. The main objective is to test the insertion of IDN labels within the raw zone files. And there's two approaches: either using DNAMEs records as defined on RFC 2672, and DNAMEs are labels for new domain name that's designated to an already existing domain name. And the other approach is to use an A records insertion of on the zone files. And there is currently an ongoing work on finalizing the technical testing project and launching the timelines for that. There's many challenges regarding IDN deployments, and from a worldwide perspective, we have the problem of dispute resolutions, policies and mechanisms currently that are not in place, and there's problems on who is databases and how applications are dealing with IDNs, domain names, and we have security issues regarding spoofing, phishing, and all that, and there's intellectual property issues regarding IDMs, domain names, and there's lots of work have to be done in the policy development processes, even within the ICANN organizations and framework from the GNSO to the CSNSO Council. And all those issues and challenges have to be dealt in an inclusive way, so the issue does not have to have a political perspective, and everyone should participate on this regard. There is the issue of local content development. Without local content development and local websites and local contents in our languages, IDN will be something without use, useless. So we need to push on the local content development as well. You can find more information about the current IDN issues within the ICANN on those URLs already displayed. I'm very happy to see there's Alex has presented the African perspective at first, because we need the local initiatives, and there's in a worldwide scale there's currently many regional initiatives working on now, and people rely on that to push IDN on the grassroots. That's it. I hope I was short. I was precise, but if any clarification or comments are needed, I'm here. Thank you very much.
Bonjour, mon nom c'est Yaoui Yaton du Bénin. Je trouve l'initiative IDN très intéressante, mais je disais que je trouve l'initiative intéressante, mais je me demande aussi comment vous faites pour que, au même moment, cette initiative ne bloque pas le développement de l'Internet, parce que si, au niveau local, nous sommes assurés que nous pouvons taper les noms de domaine dans nos langues locales. Et si un Chinois, par exemple, me donne sa carte de visite avec son adresse email en anglais et en chinois, là, c'est déjà un problème, parce que je n'aurai pas le clavier chinois chez moi. Et, je voulais venir au fait que c'est un travail, un bon travail qui est en train d'être fait, mais au même moment, il faut attirer l'attention des gens sur le fait que nous communiquons avec des langues internationales. Donc, c'est un travail qui va nous aider beaucoup au niveau local, au niveau sous-régional, mais il ne faut pas que les gens oublient à un moment donné qu'il faut qu'on arrive quand même à communiquer avec un ou deux ou trois, quatre langues. Donc c'est un point sur lequel l'initiative doit aussi continuer constamment à réfléchir. Merci.
Thank you very much for the question. Regarding the application side, there were good developments. For example, on the browser side, if you are using Firefox currently, Internet Explorer version 7 is IDN enabled, and Windows Vista, they're talking, it's an IDN enabled too. So in terms of applications, you have applications that could enable you to get the information that's already relied back on that domain name in Chinese or other languages. But the whole work of the two committees is that we're trying to have a more coordination on the global level in terms of policy and issues and challenges that's facing IDNs.
Oui, je veux aussi parler en français. Oui, vous avez parlé des défis de ces initiatives, des défis techniques, mais pas seulement, mais aussi de production de contenu. Alex avait dit déjà dans son intervention qu'il y avait naturellement des problèmes qui sont liés à la multidisciplinarité. Pierre en a parlé aussi. Et je pense que dans ce cadre-là, il faudrait essayer de voir comment mutualiser les ressources dont nous disposons au niveau du continent, notamment en termes de capacité de recherche et de production. Et je pense que dans ce cadre-là, il serait une très bonne chose que l'Association des universités africaines, qui est une institution continentale et qui a des contacts à travers tout le continent, puisse être, en tout cas, puisse contribuer à cette initiative-là, notamment en exploitant, par exemple, la base de données que l'AIEA est en train de mettre en place et qui est en train de répertorier toutes les ressources au niveau du continent dans divers, disons, dans tous les secteurs d'éducation et de recherche. Et je pense qu'en essayant d'impliquer l'AIEA dans ce processus, on pourrait plus rapidement identifier les personnes, n'est-ce pas, qui pourraient contribuer à cette initiative. Je vous remercie.
Was meant to Alex, but definitely inclusive partnership, participation, and it's needed definitely in the regional level. Yes. Yeah, thank you very much.
Okay. Bonjour à tous. Nous allons continuer en français. Okay. Ma question est un peu technique et simplement des inquiétudes que je commence à avoir avec l'évolution d'Internet. Et c'est quoi? D'un côté, niveau technique avec le routage, les migrations vers les IPv6 et de l'autre côté, les migrations aussi vers les nom de domaine international. Est-ce que tous ces nouveaux phénomènes ne vont pas contribuer à un certain moment s'il n'y a pas une coordination des perturbations qui bloquent l'évolution d'Internet dans l'avenir?
Thank you for this comment. Do you want to add something? You want to
that IDNs could work and they are stable and safe regarding in the whole system of DNS being safe implementing IDNs. So I think there is lots of development going on the technical side regarding the problems. So we don't have to, I think the whole problem is could be there's issue of linguistic issues and then we have cultural issues and we have different issues about
the mic.
I said that from the technical side, the development is going and progressing in a faster manner. But we have other issues to consider, is the linguistic issues and the cultural issues and content issues. But from the technical side, it's there's lots of development on the application side. I hope I answered that.
Okay, just a very brief comment. I think it might be worthwhile looking into canonical transcriptions of the IDNs so that when I get this nice Japanese URL, I also see some reasonably understandable, for me at least, Latin characters right next to it. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that. This could be a suggestion we can see.
Kind of IDN backwards. Thank you very much for this presentation, for the interesting comments. I would like to introduce the last speaker for this session, David Bekele from the University of Addis Ababa in Ethiopia. And thank you for, on a very short notice, actually agreeing to presenting this his presentation here. He also attended the ITU workshop on multilingualism last week in Geneva, and so I asked him to give a short summary of his presentation that he gave there, because I thought that would be interesting in this context.
Thank you very much, Miriam, for giving me this opportunity. I think it's an interesting issue for, and I'm happy that I can contribute to that. Multilingualism is increasingly considered as very important for the world. I will take as an example a country that I know very well, which is my own country, and also a continent that I know very well, Africa, and will try to explain this within this context. For example, in Ethiopia we have had wars, etc., and very much related with the recognition of people's languages, cultures, etc. And now we have come to a conclusion, and we are saying that everybody has a right to speak the language he wants, etc. And in our constitution, it is enshrined that it is a right to speak his or her own language. And after that, things are getting a little better. We have a little better peace, and that will contribute to the development of the country. So this is what is happening in the real world. In the real world, not only in Africa, but even if you consider the developed world, you take France, for example, they are recognizing some languages that they did not recognize some years ago. So it's something that is happening in the real world. And what about the cyberspace? I believe that as we nurture multilingualism in the real world, we have to nurture multilingualism in the real in the cyberspace as well. But what is happening right now? Alex was talking about the achievements that we have had in Ethiopia. It's true, more than any other country in sub-Saharan Africa, we have been working in establishing Ethiopic and Amharic in the cyberspace and also in computing. For the last 20 years at least, we have done a lot of things. But in spite of that, I will show you some examples, and you will see that the picture is completely different in the cyberspace. Here is an example of the website of one of the most popular newspapers in Ethiopia. I think there is an English version and an Amharic version, and I'm sure that probably 95% of the sales is in the Amharic version. You go to the website, what do you find? The English version of the website. And one should know that he has to go and click here and go to Amharic. I'm sorry, the internet is not working now. But anyway, there is an Amharic version. It works. It was cached, fortunately. So there is an Amharic version, but you had to know English first. So that is one case. Another one. Okay. Here is the website of the Addis Ababa City Administration. The Ethiopian national language is Amharic, and the regional language of Addis Ababa is Amharic. If you go to the administration, you will find nobody who speaks anything but Amharic. You go to the website, what do you find? Everything is in English. And you have to find some Amharic news there in order to get something in Amharic. In fact, this Amharic news is the electronic version of the newspaper of the city government, which is fully in Amharic. Okay? So I think I have it here. That is the newspaper. Even that, you see that there are a lot of English in there. While on the paper version, there is no English. Okay? So what is happening on the cyberspace is completely different to what is happening in the real world. And this presentation tries to show the discrepancy that exists in terms of languages in the world and in the cyberspace, and identify, well, there are a lot of problems that exist, but I will focus on something I know better than the rest, hardware and software causes, and propose some of the solutions that we have identified in Ethiopia. What are the percentages of languages spoken in the world? You see that most people speak Mandarin Chinese, 38% of the population of the world, while only 11% speak English. In fact, there are some statistics that put that up to 6% or so, but 11% is much less than 38%. Then, when you see the people on the internet, there are 35% who speak English and 13% Chinese. I will skip the others in order to save time. And when you go to content, you see that 68% of the content on the internet is in English, and there are some statistics that say that it goes up to 79% or something. While you see for Chinese, for example, you have only 4% of the content on the internet in Chinese. In fact, Chinese is not the worst language represented on the internet. There are many other languages that do not exist at all on the cyberspace, while there are millions of people speaking, writing those languages in the real world. Information that I have found is that 90% of the languages are not found on the internet. The proportion of languages of the content on the cyberspace is very different from that of the population on the ground, on the real world. If you take English, it has 11% of the population of the world, while we have seen that it has 35% of online population and 68% of cyberspace content. For Mandarin, 38% of the population of the world, 13.7% of online population has Chinese or Mandarin as a native language, and 4% only of the cyberspace content is in Chinese. There are many other languages worse represented. Why this discrepancy? There are economic reasons, in fact. There is a digital divide. For example, you'll find less people who speak Afar who have computers than people who speak English. So that is a problem. I'm not going to go into that because it's by itself a big problem. But there are technological problems, and that is where I'm going to intervene. This will be the focus of the presentation. I will focus, in fact, on two main technological problems. The problem to develop the digital content in the language using computer hardware and software. That is one problem. And the problem of representing the content itself. The first is the difficulty to find the hardware that supports some of the language's scripts. For example, Ethiopic is the script that is used for Amharic, the Ethiopian national language, and we didn't have, and still we don't have, a standard keyboard. And this is creating a problem for inputting the data. Difficulty to find software to develop content in the language of the content. For example, Amharic, you can write Amharic for the last 20 years at least, 20, 30 years on a computer. But you have to use, for example, this. Okay, I have written in Nairobi, which is in Amharic, in Ethiopic, but what do you see? File, edit, view, etc. What does it mean? It means you have to be an English speaker to write Amharic. So it limits, in fact, the people who can develop content to the elites who speak a foreign language. I have seen some papers that say that even in those languages where English and French is the national language, only 10% or so of the population speak those languages. So by limiting this, by not providing a software in the local language, then you are limiting the content developers to those 10% of the population. So Ethiopic content has been developed for decades with software with English interface, that is Nairobi. Okay, so what is the solution? The solution that we are proposing for the last few years is localization, is to change the interface of the software to local languages, cultures, and tradition. It's not only, localization does not concern only the language. It also concerns the culture and tradition. I'll give you an example. In Ethiopia, for example, the national date system okay. So, in Ethiopia we have a date system that is not the Gregorian. It doesn't work? Yeah, maybe I have to hold it like this. I'm sorry. So the date system is different, the official date system. We are currently in 1998, so we have our millennium celebration in 2 years. And for most Ethiopians, they do not understand that the rest of the world is in 2006. Now, currently, what they are doing is that to use a computer, they have to learn the date system of the rest of the world. Why should they? If they are working locally on their computer, they don't need to know other people's culture, traditions, etc. This is very important, especially now that computers are being used not only by the elites, but by people from by peasants, etc. Okay. For decades, proprietary software developers, there was no other alternative than using proprietary software, and especially for African languages, working. Okay. So for African languages, it was difficult to find a developer who would be wishing to develop a local version of the software. For example, even though Ethiopians have been using Microsoft products for the last 20 years at least, it has not been localized to Amharic. And only recently there is an interest from Microsoft to localize those products. Okay, it's understandable because these languages do not have economic power. There are very few Ethiopians who can purchase Microsoft products. So recently there are many localization projects that are being done using free and open source software for various reasons. First, there is no need of authorization to localize a full software. Until now, we had to wait until Microsoft decided to localize Windows. When we wanted to localize Linux, we didn't have to ask anybody. We can do the localization by ourselves, and that is what we did. The economic reasons, because proprietary softwares are owned by business people who are interested only in languages that can make money. For free and open source software, that is not really the case, because the localizers are not necessarily the software producers. For example, Linux is produced by some people, and there are other groups who are localizing in many other languages. For example, you can take the localize.zd, I think, in South Africa, who are localizing for all South African languages, products that are developed by other people. So the developers are not necessarily the localizers. Localizers have other reasons, not necessarily economic reasons, but for example, the diaspora is very much involved in localization because it's a question of pride, political will, technical interest, etc. And in localization, there are things that the software developers didn't initially predict. For example, if you take the date, for most software developers, localization of the date is just changing January into Janvier or etc. So it's just changing the name. But for us, it was really changing the calendar system. And we didn't find an easy way to localize. And what we did was to really go into the code and change. For at least one software, we did that. And that is not possible for a proprietary software because you have to deal with the software producer. Okay. And the second problem is the representation of content. Until the 1990s, ASCII was the standard representation for in the computer, but also on the internet. And it was adequate only for Latin-based languages, and even that for some Latin-based languages. It was necessary to use complex methods just to represent the content of other scripts and alphabets. I can tell you, for example, what we did for Amharic. For Amharic, the first thing that we did was scan it as an image and put the first Amharic websites were image websites. You had the Amharic text in images. You can imagine how much time it takes to download a single page. So there was a solution, but a very complex one. Then we asked the users to download fonts. So you download a font, then once you have downloaded, then you can read the website, which is, of course, complicated. Well, there are other solutions as well. Fortunately, Unicode is solving at least bit by bit the problem, and it is really a very good opportunity for scripts of the world. But there are other standards. Unicode is not everything. There are other standards where it is important to include multilingualism, and I cite here XML, but any other, I think there are other standards, and that is one reason why as Africans and as people who support multilingualism, we have to involve in as many standardization projects as possible. As a conclusion, I would say that the first step toward multilingualism in the cyberspace is to have in the cyberspace content in all languages of the world in a proportion that respects more or less the population. That is maybe a vision, but I think it is doable. And I believe that localization is crucial for multilingualism in the cyberspace, because unless we have localization, then we limit the number of people who can participate to develop content, and then we will not be able to have multilingualism in the cyberspace. Thank you.
I think we have a few minutes for comments and questions before we break for lunch. Mark?
Mark Elkins from Johannesburg. The translators in South Africa are translate.org.za, and they were partially funded, for example, by CO.ZA, the equivalent of CCTLD. And I think it makes perfect sense for CCTLDs to support these types of initiatives. And obviously, translate.org, they translated all of the open source software, which doesn't mean to say that it has to run on Linux. OpenOffice works very, very nicely on Windows as well. And as far as your date problem goes, a lot of Unix people know that if you look at the calendar, use the calendar program for 1752 September, the English actually compromised and dropped days from our calendar, and we even convinced our colonial partners, America, to do the same thing as well. So we actually changed, we did change time at that time as well.
Aminu, Nigeria. I think that maybe the real answer is for us to populate the internet and do a lot of R&D, because sometimes the explanations are much simpler. For instance, you did not address us in Amharic because you knew we mostly don't speak it. So it was not a technical problem as such. Thank you.
Yeah, hi. I thank you for your contribution on this and the previous presentations from Senegal. I think maybe there's several of these efforts going on in different environments. It might help us, those of us who are in the academic world, to have the ISOCs of the world to have a technical working group that can coordinate our efforts better. I also know that there is similar efforts going on here in Kenya, coordinated with Microsoft. So you have pockets of us in different university environments working in similar issues, but we're not talking to each other. I never knew what's going on in Senegal. I didn't know what is in Ethiopia. When I was teaching in the U.S., I also have colleagues who are Africans from the diaspora who are also working in problems like this. So a mechanism where maybe ISOC, maybe Dr. Barry from the Association of African Universities to coordinate a mechanism where we have a small or a research group that basically coordinate our efforts in terms of research. Because the reason why the internet is where it is today is actually R&D with a partnership with the private sector. So it is okay for us in academia to think about these things and do prototypes and do research, but if the private sector can actually connect to what our efforts are and those of us who are interested in this process have a mechanism to talk to each other, I think it will go a long way. But I think it's the right way forward, and I really commend all of these efforts, and I think we need to all talk and communicate better. And thank you.
Can I comment on that? Okay, I think you raised a very important issue. Before commenting on what you have said, maybe I will say something on the previous comment. I'm not sure if I understood very well, but maybe what you are saying is that let's go and write content where there are people who can speak English or anyway, I think there is something very different on the internet compared to, for example, this conference. What makes internet a very interesting tool is that anybody can contribute, and if we limit the people to contribute the contribution of people just by the language, then we are really restricting the people who are contributing. If you take people in the US, for example, you find people who with a very limited educational background, etc., who develop very interesting websites. In Africa, this is not possible because there is this language barrier. You have to belong to a certain elite in order to contribute to the internet. And this has to change. Anybody with anything to contribute should be able to contribute on the internet. You don't have to be to have a university degree or something to be able to develop content on the internet. If we don't do that, then the content in the local languages will not increase as much as we want it. So that is my point. The second intervention is very important because, yes, there are efforts here and there. They are not really coordinated. There is a lot of experience. For example, the Ethiopian experience is a very long experience. We have at least 20 years of experience in localization with a lot of mistakes. And unfortunately, I see those same mistakes being done by other people in other countries. So it is very important that we have a continental project. I really support what is being done in Dakar, but I believe it has to be even more institutionalized, and you have to deal with the ACALAN, which is now under the African Union. So it is important that it is a continental project, and the countries who are starting in the localization area will benefit from the long experience of other countries, and we can go very far in a very little time. I don't think that we have time to waste right now. Those countries who are starting don't have time to waste. For example, I'm hearing in Nigeria, for example, there are a lot of keyboards coming here and there. We have made this mistake in the last 20 years. I don't know why Nigeria is doing the same mistakes now. We have to go to standardization right away. You don't have to create the 20 keyboards before going to localization, to standardization. Thank you.
Just a quick follow-up. Thank you for that response. Ideally, I think we could learn a lot from what has happened in the open source environment. And I think that could be a good source of motivation, how they evolved to where people think it was just a bunch of dreamers to becoming a reality. And I can see that these efforts can learn a lot from what has happened in that world. But thank you for your points. Thank you.
Okay, Mark Elkins. From a geekish point of view on the internet, I saw a very nice Russian keyboard which had miniature little LCDs on the top of each key. Now, the purpose of that is that you can download fonts for playing games, but the way the Russians were looking at it is that you could also download anything else you wanted. So you could end up with a keyboard that can represent potentially many languages. I won't say every language, but it was about 20 times the price of a normal keyboard.
Alex Gakuru, would you say, Professor, that with the localization and access to internet by a bigger population other than the exclusive club, you are saying that it has an impact, or you see an impact on other processes in the society, Ethiopian society or others, on, say, other things like democracy, participation, and other things? Just what would be your quick comment? Thank you.
Definitely, I believe that internet is opening the world. It is very difficult for governments, for example, internet is giving power to the citizen. You can put your ideas on the internet even if you are a simple citizen, while you have difficulty to do it if it is on the print media, etc. So I think internet has a lot of impact for democracy, for citizen participation, etc. And this can be done only if people can do it in the language they are most comfortable with. In fact, even in a classroom when I am teaching, sometimes the participation decreases because I am teaching in English in the university. So what I say, okay, you can use the language that you want. And they start speaking Amharic, and the participation increases, and my class gets better. So my interest is the idea, is not the language. So that serves the purpose. And I believe that will be the same in the internet.
Sunday, is there an Aramaic English dictionary online? And guides to people to create content in English, for example, which can then be converted to Aramaic. I mean, just I'd like to know.
I don't think there is an Amharic English dictionary. Well, there may be small versions, but really something that is usable, I don't think so.
Reason why I asked the question is that one of the small steps you can take in making your job much easier is to create the environment for people to actually do things. Working cooperatively with a group of people all over the world who have interest in the language, you can actually develop contents beyond your own imagination. I think Wikipedia, for example, is a good example of such success that can be achieved when you rely on others to build your content for you. Just a comment in that direction.
Thank you very much. My name is Ben Akko from Senegal. There is actually a very dynamic and very interactive group of people that have been doing work on language as well as localization in Africa. If you go to bisharat.net, you would find a lot of work currently going on, and I think Dr. Dawit was at the inauguration of this network. There's a lot of work on free and open source, and if you want to be a part of it, I think you can be a part of it at that level. There's a very, very dynamic news list going on that addresses some of the concerns that we have in terms of education and stuff like that. Thank you.
Thank you. A very quick one. I think you alluded to the fact that citizen participation will be promoted when they access to the internet and all of those things. And this is something I'm thinking about because talking on e-governance in Africa, where we've been assisting countries, implement some of those things, some of those tools, and we are yet to see the result actually. And to give you an example, one of the parliaments, in Africa, where we actually put some computers and then train some of the MPs, and we were thinking that, maybe that will help them take some of the appropriate decisions. But in fact, we haven't seen much, actually, I would say, development in the sense that, some of the decisions were not even being democratic at all, although they were exposed to whatever is happening outside, whatever, constitution is there. They will review their constitution without even considering what is happening elsewhere. I mean, what I'm trying to say is that the environment is important. And when we mean participation, it just doesn't happen because people have those tools. There's an environment is there, and there's some sort of, I would say, advocacy there. But that was not my major concern, actually. My concern, in fact, what I would say, I would like to reinforce what one colleague said earlier on, which is now we found out that there are so many initiatives happening up there. When we organized this thing in Dakar, this meeting around the, what Corentin presented, we saw that things are happening, actually. But then people don't know. So this suggestion that maybe the, what they call African Association of Universities, the network, the Timbubaka was supposed to coordinate, I would say this group could take this sort of resolution, or what, I mean, not resolution, but a concrete action item to, so that people be responsible for maybe collecting those sort of initiatives and make sure that, okay, some of the people could participate. That's the way we could advance those things. What Professor said about Ethiopia, yeah, we knew that something's happening there, but that's all. There should be a way where people coming from Togo, whatever place, should be in touch with researchers in Kenya, and to develop, because the people are just there, they are looking for you guys to tell exactly what's going to happen. If you don't do that, they'll just use whatever material comes, you know, there. And it will be coming from outside. You'll be sending dollars out there. So I think it's important that while we be in charge of this, if you want to move forward, then people be responsible for these things. And then accountability. We should know exactly, timeline speaking, what are they going to deliver. That for me is going to be much more concrete. Thanks.
Thank you, Pierre. Do you want to comment on that from the AAU side, or just take that input?
Oui, en français. Oui, je pense que la volonté est là, puisque il y a eu plusieurs interventions dans ce sens. Et comme Pierre vient de le dire, je pense que c'est l'occasion pour les parties prenantes de se retrouver et de prendre des décisions pour des actions concrètes dans le moyen terme, même dans le court terme. Je pense que c'est une excellente chose que ces réunions que nous menons ici en Afrique débouche aussi sur des choses très concrètes. Et un exemple que je peux donner par rapport à ça, c'est donc le MOU que l'Association des universités africaines, AFNOC et AFRINIC est en train de rédiger pour la coopération dans le cadre de la mise en place des réseaux d'enseignement et de recherche. Et je pense que un des résultats de cette réunion pourrait naturellement être que toutes les parties prenantes dans ce qui se fait dans la localisation puissent se retrouver avant de quitter Nairobi pour mettre en place un agenda de coopération pour que les efforts qui sont en train d'être faits soient le plus efficients possible.
D'accord, je vais répondre en français. En fait, il y a une initiative qui a débuté à Genève, parce qu'il y avait une réunion sur le multilinguisme à Genève il y a juste une semaine, et avec l'initiative de la CALAN qui a essayé de regrouper les différentes personnes qui travaillent sur ce domaine. Peut-être, plutôt que d'avoir encore plusieurs initiatives, il serait bien qu'on ait une initiative et peut-être action concrète qu'on peut faire, c'est d'aller d'ici avec une liste d'initiatives qui doivent travailler ensemble et peut-être décider de quelqu'un qui va coordonner ce travail et d'aboutir peut-être d'ici quelques jours ou quelques mois à une réunion de toutes ces initiatives afin de voir un peu comment on peut faire à long terme quelque chose de bien institutionnel. Je pense que c'est les projets ne sont pas suffisants. Il faut qu'il y ait une institution qui est en charge pour le long terme, parce que ce n'est pas quelque chose qui va s'arrêter aujourd'hui, c'est quelque chose qu'il faut poursuivre pour très longtemps et qu'on peut et qui peut nous permettre de dire que d'ici quelques années, on sera sûr que les langues africaines seront bien représentées dans le cyberespace.
Adiel, you're between us and lunch, you know that? Go ahead.
Uh, just want to add to what Barry has said before, and going in the same line with what has been said by the presenter, I think the most important thing for us, and I think all of us agree, is to coordinate our effort. One thing which I still think will be the good thing is that at the end of this discussion, we set up either a liaison, either an action plan, which we use as input in the last meeting in Geneva, and have a joint committee. We need to share information. We need to work together. That is the key point. And if we don't reach that, 10 years later, we will be here talking about the same thing again. Let's put in place action plan, what we want to do. 1, 2, 3, and move. Thanks.
May I suggest that maybe those who spoke up and were interested in that topic, like David, Adiel, maybe Bobakar, Pierre, could just sit together over lunch, share a table at lunch, and see where we can go further, because I'm afraid we have no time left to do this in that session here. I thought it was a very interesting session. Thank you very much, all the presenters and all the commenters from the audience. And wish you good lunch. I suggest we meet here again at 2:30. 2:15 something, yeah, between 15 and 30, and then we can have the afternoon session on internet governance and policy issues, and I'm looking forward to an interesting discussion there too. Yeah, lunch tickets. Is it working? Lunch tickets are handed out by the door.